Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Jason, the Cincinnati Reds recently signed 27-year-old starter Homer Bailey to a six-year, $105 million contract. Bailey, who has a career ERA of 4.25, set a career high in innings last year with 209 and strikeouts, 199. He's already spun two no-hitters. How do you feel as a Cleveland Indians fan watching your cross-state rivals lock up a good young starting pitcher like that?
I'm not very happy because obviously Randy Rowley, Justin Masterson's agent, is going to bring a copy of that contract with him to any negotiations they have about Justin Masterson. He's printing out a copy of that right now. He's just going to keep it in his pocket for the next couple weeks. So, I don't know what's going on in my computer here. There's like noise leaking in. I don't know if you can hear that.
Yeah, I did just hear that. Sorry.
I'll get rid of that. But anyways,
we'll get it out in post. It's all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not happy about it though. I can tell you that. I mean, Homer Bailey, okay? He's a career, like you said, 4.25 ERA. He's 49 and 45 as far as wins and losses. Pitched 853 innings, 1.31 whip, 9 hits per 9, 1 homer per 9. You go to Justin Masterson. Masterson, now it's a little skewed because, you know, he spent time in the bullpen. So his win-loss is a little iffy, but it's 53 and 63 with a career 4.03 ERA with just over 1,000 innings, 8.6 hits per 9, 0.7 home run per 9. I mean, they're very, very similar. And so if you're Antonetti right now, you have to think about 6 years and $100 million for Justin Masterson.
How do you feel about $17.5 million average annual value for Masterson?
Not good, but I mean, with the way this pitching market is, where do you expect it's going to go?
Right. That's what I was just about to say. He came in under $20 million. I mean, do you feel okay about signing a guy who's going to be at the top of your rotation for under $20 million?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other side of the argument, right? And the thing is the contract 6 years. So in 2020, how high are starting pitching salaries going to be?
Right, yeah.
I mean, and here's the thing. Bailey's only going to be 33 in 2020.
Right.
So the Reds are going to actually get out while they're getting still good. Not like Robbie Cano's contract where the Mariners are on the hook till he's, like, collecting Social Security or something.
Till he's Bobby Bonilla's age.
I don't know. Salaries are out of control. I'm sure that'll come up more than once in this podcast.
Yeah, that's why our ticket prices aren't getting any cheaper.
Somebody's got to pay those salaries.
That's right. Well, today we're going to be talking Cleveland Indians. We got spring training underway for all the clubs now. So we got a little bit of stuff to talk about. After Cleveland, we will transition into Pittsburgh. And then we're going to get on our soapbox on a Wednesday and talk about qualifying offers. So, Jason, let's get started with you in Cleveland. Let's talk about some of the arbitration cases that were settled. You guys, the Indians, finally went to arbitration for the first time in 58 years.
22, actually.
To be exact.
But, yeah, they went to arbitration with Vinny Pestano and Josh Tomlin, and they won both of those cases. They did not end up going to arbitration with Michael Brantley. They reached a four-year, $25 million contract extension with him. And they didn't end up going to arbitration with Justin Masterson either. Last night, they reached a one-year, $9.7 million contract with him for 2014. So actually, as I said on this show, repeating what I had read from Paul Hoynes in The Plain Dealer, they didn't go to hearings with all those players, and the two they didn't go with were the two best players.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I've said this multiple times in my, you know, weekly columns. The Indians were trying to prove a point by going to hearing with Pestano and Tomlin. And the Indians apparently made their point because they won. They won both of those cases. Tomlin actually, the Indians filed at $800,000. He filed at $975,000. That was the smallest difference of any player and team. It's like that's the kind of difference that usually never goes to arbitration, but apparently the Indians did not want to budge, and the arbiter sided with them. The Brantley extension, I'm really happy about. I mean, it really only buys out 1 year of his free agency because this was his first year of arbitration. But, you know, it gives you a fixed cost as you go forward for the next 4 years. For a really solid player, I think it's a solid value. And I'm happy they didn't end up going to hearing with Masterson, as, you know, as we talked about before, hearings aren't nice affairs.
They are nasty.
It really wouldn't help your case trying to sign him long term. Vinny Pestano did not like the way that his hearing went, from all reports. He was apparently upset because they used quotes from him that he gave to the newspaper against him. But I just think it's kind of amusing because it's like, well, I don't know. That sounds like actually a really good strategy. You were telling the truth, right? Like you'd say, like, well, I didn't pitch very well. I'm not pitching well right now. Or things like that. And they're like, see, he said it himself. Case closed. So I don't know. It's over. That's all I can say. As far as, you know, Masterson, now they're going to look toward still trying to work out an extension with him. We'll see what happens there. Like you said, spring training is actually underway. The position players are all reported. I think they're going to take live batting practice on Friday. So not yet, but soon everyone will get to see Carlos Santana play third base. Watched it on the grainy ESPN 3 feed from the Dominican World Series like I did.
Yeah. Which I have to say, you were not feeling very confident all winter long about that shift to third base. And now it's definitely a reality. It's going to be happening.
Well, I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves. He's not penciled in as the everyday third baseman yet. My whole argument is until they get another catcher, and at this point I'm not convinced that Matt Traynor counts. I mean, that could change, but until they get another catcher, he's not the everyday third baseman.
Right. By the way, I think you forgot that we have to refer to Matt Traynor as Misty May Traynor's husband.
Okay, Mr. Misty May Traynor. You know, but the reality, I guess, is that, you know, the other option for third base really is Lonnie Chisenhall, who, you know, I mean, he's number one draft pick. They've invested a lot of time into Lonnie Chisenhall. I'm a big Lonnie Chisenhall supporter. So if Chisenhall makes the team, Santana would probably only play third base against left-handers. You know, one, that doesn't really help Lonnie Chisenhall's development.
Right.
Never let him face a lefty. Two, as I said before, Santana is not a great defensive catcher when he plays there every day. I don't even want to imagine what it would look like if he played there like once a week. On top of, oh, then can you go play third base once a week?
And maybe we'll pepper in a little bit of first base.
And yeah, you know, you can play first base every once in a while.
And just to work on your mental toughness, we're going to make you play DH. Some days you won't even play in the field.
Yeah, which you expressed to us over the winter that you really didn't want to do. So that'll be something interesting to, you know, watch going forward. I will say Terry Francona was quoted in the Plain Dealer as saying, skeptical's not the right word of how I felt about Carlos playing third base. But it's looking, I can't remember the end. That's the end of the quote because I can't remember the rest. But it was basically, to paraphrase, but it's actually not looking too shabby. But skeptical's not the word, but it's the first one that comes to mind. As Chuck Palahniuk's famous for writing in some of his books. So I'm excited to watch and play, see how it goes. Who knows? As far as free agent market, you know what happened.
You had a bird fly the coop there.
a big Yubi bird fly the coop. Ubaldo signed with the Orioles for 4 years, and it was $50 million?
I think it was 50. Yeah, it was reported at 48, I think, when I read it first, and then later on talked up to 50. Yeah. So what is it? What does this do to your rotation now with Ubaldo gone?
Well, I mean, you know, we've kind of been the first 2 months of the offseason, we operated on the idea Ubaldo was going to be gone. Then we were kind of lured back in a little bit. But so we're back to Masterson, Kluber, Salazar, and McAllister. And after that, it's like a five-man horse race for that last spot.
Yes. I'm familiar with those.
Yeah. Which you kind of got the same thing going. We'll talk about later. We've got Carlos Carrasco, who's out of options, so he has to make the team somehow.
Right.
We've got Trevor Bauer and his revamped mechanics. We've got Sean Markham coming back from thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. We've got Josh Tomlin, little cowboy, as Manny Acta called him. And now a late hat thrown into the ring, Aaron Harang, who signed a minor league deal like over the weekend. Now you might ask yourself, why did Aaron Harang suddenly present himself? And that was probably because it was released that Sean Markham was going to be delayed 7 to 10 days before he could throw his first pitch because of his rehab. So I think Aaron Harang's little ears perked up and said, well, Sean Markham probably had the best shot to win that fifth starter spot. So if he's hurt, sign me up. I'll get my glove. I'll be there tomorrow.
And now that is how Aaron Harang is gainfully employed.
Yeah. He's got, you know, the classic $1 million minor league deal if you make the team contract. So definitely no harm there. Yeah, I mean, that's what it's going to be. Carrasco obviously is going to get the most benefit of the doubt because he needs to make the team. After that, you know, I think they would really want Markham to make the team, but obviously you can't will his shoulder into shape. And as far as guys who down the road, you know, could make starts or come up, the highest upside is Cody Anderson. The guy who, you know, more likely would come up as filler, and you never know what would happen, would be TJ House. But those guys aren't really in consideration in spring training. If you just look at the starting rotation, all you really need to know is if Kluber and McAllister, this is the way I look at it, if Kluber and McAllister can make 50 starts together, then we're going to be all right.
Yeah.
If they can't make 50 starts, you know, you're going to have to really dip into that pool of reserves. I mean, if those guys are all fighting to be your fifth starter, that's one thing. But if they're fighting to be, you know, your third or fourth starter, you better hope somebody brings their A game.
Well, what do you think about Salazar's leap going into this season? What does Danny Salazar need to contribute to Cleveland for them to be successful as a ball club?
I mean, more than anything, Danny Salazar just needs to be healthy.
Right.
And, you know, he's had a lot of arm problems, and they've babied him up through the minors. If you want to talk about what he needs to help, the thing he needs to do most to help the team is be healthy. The thing he needs to do most to help his development as a pitcher is to continue to refine his slider. Because his slider, when he has it on, is a very devastating out pitch and obviously a great change of pace from 100 mile an hour fastball.
Right, yeah.
If he doesn't have a slider, basically you're looking at a fastball changeup guy. And, you know, as we saw, even Delmon Young can hit 100 mile an hour fastball over the fence if he knows it's coming.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Salazar, you know, I focus on Kluber and McAllister, but he's just as much of a key because he's an injury risk also.
Right.
That's all I really have from Goodyear. What do you got going on in Pirates camp?
Well, funny that you should ask, Jason. Plenty of stuff going on since AJ Burnett dumped us for Philadelphia.
Oh, burned lover.
That's it stung a little bit. I'm not gonna lie.
Did you really consider that it was gonna happen, or did you always think he was gonna come to Pittsburgh or retire?
You know what? Here's my folly is I took him at his word, which as I was conducting my research for that AJ Burnett timeline.
Yeah.
I went back and listened to his interview where he stated, I can't remember who he was talking to, which I don't think it was Travis Sawchuk. It was like one of the 93.7, the fan guys.
Yeah.
Colin Dunlap, I think was maybe who he was talking to.
Yes, it was.
But he said, he said in that initial interview, Colin Dunlap asked him just flat out, are you coming back to Pittsburgh or retiring? Is that what you're saying? And AJ Burnett said, yeah, yeah, that's where I'm at right now. And he threw that little qualifier in there, you know, just like, yeah, that's where my mind's at right now.
Right.
And I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to believe he left himself that little wiggle room there. And so the whole offseason, I'm like, well, he's going to come back to Pittsburgh or retire because that's what he said.
Yeah.
That was my fault. Now, I know all about the paper chase. I'd go for the money too. I don't fault him for that.
Now, so Neil Huntington, after AJ Burnett signed with Philadelphia, Neil Huntington was on the Fan, right?
Right, yeah.
And it was an interesting conversation. He basically started out by, and this is my words, throwing AJ Burnett under the bus. Because he basically was like, yeah, it was the understanding that AJ was either going to come back or retire. And then I thought it was interesting because he really slowly transitioned into basically talk about penny pinching.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, he flat out said in the interview, because they asked him, you know, straight up, they said, why didn't you just extend him that qualifying offer? And he said, we just don't have that kind of money to spend.
Right. Now, okay. That's what
he flat out said.
Yeah. So I think that's, you know, an interesting maneuver he tried to pull off. Like, first I'm going to put the blame on AJ, and then I'm going to introduce that maybe we just didn't have the money.
Right.
And you can just focus on the first thing that I said. I'm sure all the Pirates fans know. But so the Pirates didn't offer Burnett the qualifying offer. So they did not tender a $14.1 million contract. So that meant that when he left, they didn't get a draft pick as compensation. Correct. Now you linked in your article to a report, I don't remember if it was in the Tribune Review or the Post-Gazette, that what the actual offer from the Pirates was 1 year and $12 million.
Yes, that was one of the stated offers.
Right.
Was for 1 year, $12 million.
Which I'd like to point out, I was going to bring this up earlier and I forgot. Mark Shapiro admitted today that the Indians' only offer was the qualifying offer towards Ubaldo.
Oh, really?
They never gave him another offer.
Yeah, they never went anywhere else with it.
Which I'm sure was because it never came down low enough. They just, what's the point, you know?
Right, yeah.
If he's getting 4 year, $50 million offers, you're not going to give 1 year 12 or something.
right.
Anyways, okay, so back to the Pirates. So they offered 1 year 12, He signed for 1 year, 16, with a mutual option for next year.
Correct. So I think it could end up being worth like, I think the total value of the contract was like $30 million.
Something like that.
Off the top of my head. I don't have it pulled up here, but yeah. So yeah, he could have another year next year.
Now that's got to feel like an even bigger kick in the pants, because not only did he sign for 1 year, he gave himself the ability to come back next year.
Right, yeah.
When he was spending all offseason saying it's either Pittsburgh or retire. Well, it's either Philadelphia 1 year or two.
Pittsburgh or retire, or Philadelphia for a year
or two.
Yeah. Now, I think he whispered that at the end of the interview.
Yeah, right. The mics didn't pick that up.
We just missed that.
Now, and here's something that I didn't realize till today when I was looking into this. Now, I know that part of AJ Brunette's contract was being paid by, I don't know, the Yankees?
Yep.
Last year?
The club that can afford to eat half of a $16 million contract.
Right, but he was making $16.5 million last year.
Right, yeah.
Now, again, I understand that that's not what the Pirates were paying. But don't you think it was a little short-sighted on Neil Huntington's part to be like, well, after you led the National League in strikeouts and helped us get to the playoffs, we'd like you to take a $4.5 million pay cut.
Listen, man, if you want to talk about hindsight in this conversation, I think if Neil Huntington were to start this whole process over from the beginning, that he would, I think he would have conducted things completely differently. And I think if he, in his deepest, darkest moments, like when he's on his deathbed, and someone asks him, like, Neil, man, you really screwed the pooch on that AJ Brunette deal, didn't you? He's going to go, yes! Well, and then die. That's how Neil Huntington dies. Yes!
Well, we don't know the answer to that question yet. Because if these guys, who we'll talk about in a minute, come through, then it won't blow up in his face.
That is a valid point. Or the other alternative is if AJ Brunette goes to Philadelphia and...
sucks.
Right, like just
yeah,
pitches 60 innings and is on the DL for the rest of the season. Yeah,
right. Then all of a sudden it's like, ah, I was right. See, I'm not right into that one.
There's a couple different scenarios that I envision in my head, and I haven't really worked them all out yet. But there's part of me that thinks maybe, just maybe, Neil Huntington was just sick of AJ Brunette and he'd said like you know what, like, I don't like how he pitched down the stretch at the end of the season, to the point where we pitched Garrett Cole in game five of the NLDS. Maybe it's time for us to part ways. We already know the one part of Neil Huntington is the fiscal part, which is we just can't spend this kind of money. And see, but here's the thing where you start going down the rabbit hole, because they said they didn't want to spend this kind of money.
But
so they have money to spend on AJ Brunette. You know, he'd stated that we have money put away if AJ Brunette decides he wants to come back.
They're willing to spend $12 million.
Up to $12 million. So $14 million is out of your price range. Whatever. Okay, that's fine.
$1 million more, and so you don't even get a draft pick and protect yourself if he leaves.
Right. So the reason they didn't extend him that qualifying offer, I firmly believe, is because they knew he would accept it and they didn't want to have to pay that. So then you realize, as the market starts evolving and he's, you know, basically the only starting pitcher that you're targeting, what it's going to take to bring him back, you offer him $12 million, which is under his market value by a, you know, significant amount. But then you signed, at this point, you've already signed Edinson Volquez for $5 million.
I knew I didn't have to go there myself.
Oh, I'll get you there. Don't worry. I'll get you there. I've laid awake sleepless at night thinking about this.
Uh-huh.
So, if you're telling, and I think if you asked anybody, would you rather have Edinson Volquez 1 year for $5 million or AJ Brunette 1 year for $16 million? It's going to end up being like 20% of your payroll. If you sign Brunette, I think people are still going to say, yeah, I think you want Brunette on that 1 year deal.
Yeah.
And I still think that he probably would rather have Burnett on that 1 year deal.
Well, and that's what is maddening about it. Not only, you know, did they not protect themselves over $2.1 million. And as you said, you know, they thought he would accept it, but you were willing to pay him 12. So really the dispute's over two.
Right. I honestly nobody knows how these finances work because nobody really has to open their books in baseball, which I think is a big issue when you have stadiums that are funded by states. Right. I digress. But I know that you're receiving millions of dollars from the TV deal, and whatever the amount of that money is that's in dispute that nobody's really clear on, it's a good chunk of change that you're getting from Major League Baseball distributed over some weird arbitrary amount of time, whatever. You're getting a lot of money over some period of time that you can spend on personnel if you want.
Right.
And I think, like you said, if it's coming down to $2 million, I know you're getting that money in TV revenue from Major League Baseball. Just spend it. Spend it. And like you said, at least protect yourself if he does want to go somewhere else.
Well, and the irony of it is that by not attaching the pick to him, okay, so say that he really was serious when he said, I'm either going to play in Pittsburgh or I'm going to retire, right? Say that he really meant that at the time. And then, so they say, okay, AJ, we're not going to offer you the qualifying offer because you said you're either going to play with us or you're going to retire. Well, then his mind starts churning over these, you know, I don't know, contracts like Ricky Nolasco got.
Right.
Well, I'd like another $20 million in my bank account. And he starts to think about coming back, and the fact that there's no pick attached to him
gives him liberty to go anywhere.
Right. And what I'm saying is, like, so say then he changes his mind. Well, then you'd say that if you're Neil Huntington, okay, we'll get him on the phone. I'll call him up. We're going to get back in on this game, right?
Right, now, right.
Because you didn't attach a pick to him, you priced him out of your own market.
Right, because everybody wants him. I mean, you've seen what these qualifying offers do to player values. It crushes them.
Right.
Crushes them.
Not to mention that the fact that he only wants to come back for 1 year.
Right, yeah.
So his value actually increases dollar-wise because the team has to pay less. They have less of a risk in years, so they're
right.
Willing to pay more this year. Because
yeah.
If it's a bad contract, well, they're out from underneath it in 1 year.
Right, after this season. Yeah, there's no bad 1 year deal.
Now, here's an interesting thing I want to lay on you, right?
Okay, lay it on me. Lay it on me. Is this like a conspiracy theory? We're going next level on this?
Well, sort of. We're going next level, yeah.
All right.
So, like, the Indians got a comp pick for losing Ubaldo, right?
Right.
Because the Orioles lose, like, pick number 17. Think about that for a minute. Not only did they lose $50 million, they lost pick number 17 in the draft plus that bonus pool money.
Right.
Just for the opportunity. So the Indians get, it's going to be either pick 30 or pick 31 or 32, somewhere in there, depending on what happens. Now, I don't have the exact numbers, but for those picks, but in the 2012 draft, which again, 2 years ago, picks 37 to 42, the average bonus pool money that went with that pick was $1.3 million. So what I'm saying is, you give Burnett the qualifying offer. If he doesn't take it, you actually just gained almost the difference that you didn't want to make up. See what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
It's kind of mind-boggling at that point.
I don't like anything about how I don't think this the way that free agency is structured now is doing any side any favors. It's not helping out the organizations, It's not helping out the players who have those qualifying offers dragging them down, and it's not helping the fans who are all stressed out about everything. It makes me very agitated and frustrated and sometimes nervous, and I just don't like it. I'll be happy when qualifying offers are gone forever, which is probably going to be as soon as this collective bargaining agreement's up.
I don't want to go into it because we're going to go into it later, but I don't know if I agree with all that.
Well, all right, we'll wait until I get on the soapbox.
So okay, to move on. So now you're looking at a rotation that's Liriano, Cole, Wandy, and Charlie Morton.
Yep, and then here's the thing, and this is actually probably how I would, like, just for the sake of posterity, construct the rotation right now. I would say you have Liriano and Cole, and then I would say you have Morton at number 3. And then you have Wandy and his arthritic elbow and forearm problems and whatever other issues he has.
$15 million contract.
Which we're not footing all the bill for that. Houston is paying a good chunk of his contract as well. Because apparently those are the only types of players that we trade for.
Apparently.
Players that we're only paying half of their contracts.
Well, but Neil Huntington is scouring teams' rosters right now for someone that he can get.
He can get half off. Yeah. Oh man, it's like half off rib night at the Sizzler or something around there. So you have Morton slotted in there because hopefully he's staying healthy, and then Wandy, if he's figured out his health issues, is slotted in our rotation. And then you have that whole you have that whole cluster of guys, kind of like Cleveland has, where they're all competing for that bottom spot, or depending on Wandy's health, those bottom two spots. So, you're looking at Jeff Locke's probably going to get the first crack at it because he was an all-star in the first half of last season and they liked what they saw. Brandon Compton's been one that they've been repeating over and over and over again. Don't sleep on this guy. You can't count him out. We just signed Edinson Volquez for $5 million.
Yeah, he's gonna get a shot.
he's gonna get a crack or two at it. Another guy that they've really, really been high on that a lot of people are sleeping on is Stolmy Pimentel. You've got a logjam of guys for a couple spots, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I don't know if I would necessarily call it pitching depth, but you have a lot of pitchers, guys who are paid to throw a baseball. So I guess we'll kind of see how that situation evolves as camp goes on. And like I said, I think health issues are probably going to start paring down some of those rotation spots. But as far as things stand right now, Francisco Liriano has been named the opening day starter. Kind of surprised by this, I'm not going to lie.
Woo!
I thought that they would want to make it Gerrit Cole, our homegrown player. But, it's tough to argue saying that you want that first game to go to Liriano as far as, setting the tone for the rest of your season in that game one. You want the guy who was, the comeback player of the year, who had one of the most amazing seasons that he's had in the last 5 years at Pittsburgh. I don't know.
You bet. That same Liriano shows up.
Oh, God, he's got to show up, especially now that AJ's gone.
I know.
And that's the other thing, too. If you look at that rotation with AJ Burnett slotted in there, now you're looking at Liriano, Burnett, Gerrit Cole, Charlie Morton, and then you're bumping down Wandy Rodriguez, Jeff Locke, Edinson Volquez, Compton, and Mentel are all fighting for that last spot.
And that's
I like that a lot more.
Yeah, that's a pretty good place to be.
Right.
But when Charlie Morton goes from fourth starter to third starter, that changes the dynamic a little.
Right. Things start getting a little dicier. Although I will say, since Charlie Morton's come back, and you can go see on Fangraphs, his fastball velocity has been up couple ticks.
That's not so much an indictment of Charlie Morton as in the people that would have to fill in behind him,
Yeah.
Whether you need one person or two.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I think it's fine, third starter. I think that's a good place for him. Now, if you're asking him to be a number two, that's a different story.
Yeah, that's like the Pirates of old, where you're asking Paul Maholm to be your number two starter.
You mean Paul Maholm, who last season when he was pitching against the Indians, he was throwing like a gem, right? Like a seven-inning shutout. And as the inning ended, Tom Hamilton was like, well, through seven, Maholm has a shutout. And he's just not good, folks.
I'm just going to flat out say it. He's not any good.
He's just not good, but he's kicking our butts right now.
Yeah, that Paul Maholm was our number two starter once.
So what do you, when you look to this season, you know, what do you expect from Pedro?
I expect I'm probably going to have to write him an apology letter at some point.
I mean, it's not like he led the National League with home runs last year.
No, he was tied. You're right. I'm glad you brought that up. He did not lead the National League in home runs last year because he was tied for the lead.
Yeah, held just short.
I feel like a broken record repeating this concept. But Pedro Alvarez is what he is. If you can deal with that low batting average, the home runs are going to be great. And I feel like, in fairness, even though I have not formally apologized to him in a written letter yet for maybe saying some disparaging things about his body weight, that I was somewhat just in my analysis of him last year as far as saying the things that, highlighting the things that he did well. You know, when he hits the ball the other way, which is one of the biggest things that I noticed was the difference between like good Pedro and bad Pedro. When he's not rolling over the ball and trying to rip it to right field, he's a hell of a hitter. Hell of a hitter. It's just, you know, he's going to have to figure out how to do that more consistently. He's got to start hitting to all fields. You know, he needs to cut down on the strikeouts, obviously, but hey, who doesn't in this day and age in baseball?
I mean, that's all true, but don't you run the risk if you have Pedro use the whole field and cut down on his strikeouts? Don't you run the risk of Pedro not being Pedro, like, you know, not hitting as many home runs?
Yeah, there is always that. You know, you look at Joey Votto, and what's like the most disparaging thing that people say about Joey Votto? Joey Votto's on Clubhouse Confidential right now. But everyone's like, oh, Joey Votto, he, you know, doesn't hit for power like a first baseman should. Well, he's getting on base at like a 450 clip. Maybe we shouldn't ride him so hard. Like anybody who's being highly critical of Joey Votto's baseball ability. So, I mean, I would be fine with Pedro Alvarez giving up 10 home runs if he was getting on base, you know, 100 points, if his OBP was 100 points higher. Yeah, like I think I would be fine with that evolution of a player like that, I guess. But, you know, he showed last year his flashes of brilliance. You know, he's definitely capable of playing at an incredibly high level. It's just, you know, can you continue to evolve? Can you continue to make those adjustments that you need to make? Because I guarantee, you know, if I can figure out... If I can figure out what's not working well for you, I'm pretty sure that people that dedicate their whole lives to watching baseball and managing, and they've probably figured it out too. So
probably.
But you know, the one point that I really wanted to touch on, was that the Pirates offseason was kind of quiet. They didn't make any big splashes in the free agent market. So you have to kind of ask yourself, well, after a 94-win season, how do the Pirates build on their success? And I think the both of us as fans of smaller market teams know how these teams have to do it when they don't go spend on the free agent market. Now, your team is kind of in a weird position because you went out and had your big splurge last season,
right?
On the free agent market, and now you're kind of filling in your gaps internally. But, you know, Pittsburgh, super quiet offseason. Edinson Volquez was $5 million on the free agent market, and that was about it for them.
Well,
these teams have to be able to do it internally. If you're not going to spend like that, then that's basically putting all that pressure on your farm system.
Right. And that's a scary thing. You know, I remember a couple times. I think it was after the 2000, yeah, it was after the 2007 season when the Indians made it to the ALCS. And that offseason, they did nothing. I mean, nothing. And the next year, they stunk from the word go. And by the time the All-Star break rolled around, CeCe was gone and Victor was gone, and everyone was sitting there going, huh? What just happened? This was, you know, we were in game 7 of the ALCS.
Right.
I'm not saying that, you know, that's what's going to happen to the Pirates, but it is scary when you have such a great offseason and the team, the front office fouls it up with nobody.
Right.
You know, it's you're relying on your farm system. You know,
which in Pittsburgh's case,
Pirates have a number one farm system.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is one of the positive things, but I think one of the things I've learned from watching the Pirates over the last 20 years is the volatility of prospects. I've seen a lot of John Van Benskotens in my day.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, just because you have that pedigree doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to perform. Now, you know, based on these players' track records that they built in the minor leagues, I think you have to feel somewhat confident in the fact that Jameson Taillon's probably going to be able to come up, and, you know, worst case scenario, he's going to be a major league caliber pitcher. You know, he's not like he has too much talent to just totally wash out. You know, like same thing with Gregory Polanco. You know, the Pirates have cultivated these players. You know, they've had them. You know, Jameson Taillon's been a professional baseball player for a while, and, you know, last year was his first time really touching AAA, and he's going to get another crack at AAA at the beginning of the season this year. You know, if he demonstrates he can do it there, then he's going to be coming up at some point next, you know, in this upcoming season, you're hoping, and being able to contribute. And it's very similar to the path that Gerrit Cole took last year.
Right.
And that's just how these small market teams have to be able to do it. You know, you have other guys like Andrew Lambeau who you're counting on to fill in some big gaps. You know, we DFA'd Garrett Jones, so we didn't have to deal with his increasing arbitration costs. You know, Tony Sanchez is going to get just more time in the minor leagues because of the Chris Stewart trade. You know, we picked up, like, your guys' throwaway, who you picked up from Texas, I think, Chris McGinnis.
Yeah.
Is that where you guys got him from? So, you know, you're counting on a lot of guys that are going to have to fill in some important roles in Pittsburgh. And you're hoping that they can do it coming up from the farm. Last thing I wanted to touch on was the old rumor mill's been going for the last couple weeks about this, and super agent Scott Boras is chirping on this, as you would expect. But Kendrys Morales, still on the market. And I think we talked about this a couple podcasts ago. Was it two podcasts ago, maybe, we talked about Kendrys Morales? Three podcasts?
Yeah, two.
Where, like, I've had my ebbs and flows with Morales and how I would feel about that. Initially, I was on board with it, and then we talked about it, and then I looked into it a little more, and then I wasn't on board with it.
Well, where are you at now?
I think now I reside not on board. I lean more. I'm very neutral-ish on it.
Neutral-ish.
I'm neutral-ish. I don't like, here's why I tell you the needle ticks more to the I don't like it side than the I like it side, because Morales is going to come at a steep price for multiple years, and that's why I don't like it.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're like, gun to my head, I got to make a choice, I would say no, because I don't want to have to be stuck with a 30-year-old first baseman who has negative defensive value. Yeah. And it played his first full season last year after taking 2 years off from an ankle injury. Like, that to me does not seem like a 3 or 4 year investment that I want to even start getting involved with.
Right. Well, so, I mean, the only other approach is, well, I guess there's two approaches. One you make a trade for someone like Ike Davis, or you go with Andrew Lambeau and Chris McGinnis and
what? And just see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you're, and at this point, I think it makes more sense to just go with Gabby Sanchez and whoever else you're going to throw in that crazy weird platoon at first base. Just deal with it because it's cost controllable and it's not going to lock you up to some albatross of a deal, which is probably what Kendrys Morales is going to turn into. I don't care what Scott Boras says. And I don't like that Scott Boras is out there saying, oh, Kendrys Morales makes a great fit in Pittsburgh. No, he doesn't. We are the ground ball heaviest team in baseball, and your client is one of the worst defensive players in the league. No, that is not a good fit. I mean, if I'm pressed, I'm saying Morales is, I don't think it makes a good fit in Pittsburgh. Just he's too one-dimensional. Just not going to work.
Well, you heard it here.
That's right. And that is where I take my stance, because now it's recorded in history forever on our podcast.
That's right.
So if Kendrys Morales is signed and becomes MVP after hitting 35 home runs in Pittsburgh, everyone can remind me of this.
Oh, we will.
Now, speaking of Kendrys Morales, Jason.
Yeah.
It's time for me to get up on my soapbox.
J.R. House. That,
oh, boy.
Let's take all that disgust and despair and pay it off.
Just, yeah, step off. Ooh. I'm a grit guy myself. Mm.
Keep talking there, Andy.
You know what? I'm not going to formally apologize to Al.
Drink a pint of maple syrup and raise the Jolly Roger.
Sal Fasano.
All right. Now, you're up there. What do you want to say?
I'm up on the soapbox now. I'm literally standing on a soapbox in my fiance's living room. I don't even know where you buy soap. Does soap really come in soap boxes? Is that where they got their name from? Did they literally haul soap around in soap boxes?
Well, you got to haul it in something.
Yeah. So what is it about soap boxes that made people want to get up on them? Was it like a union thing, I wonder? Was there like a big soap union thing that people flipped all their soap boxes upside down to stand on them?
I don't know.
Why is it soap boxes? Why not like fresh produce boxes?
Because they didn't used to ship fresh produce, then it wouldn't be fresh.
Very valid point.
Not to get into it, but the only reason you have fresh produce now is because they pick it when it's not ripe.
That's a very valid point. I'm going to have to do some research. I'll get back to everybody on the next podcast about why it is called soap boxes. I'm very curious. Very curious. So anyways, there's a lot of talk about soap boxes for one podcast. The qualifying offer. I got to get up on my soapbox about the qualifying offer. It drives me crazy. We were talking before we even started recording. I don't think the qualifying offer works for anybody. I don't like it from any perspective whatsoever. I don't think it's a good thing for baseball. I think maybe it had good intentions initially in that, oh, well, this is, you know, like it's going to help, you know, these smaller market teams that can't afford to keep these players, you know, make sure they're compensated. Yeah. That's how it's going to work. Well, has there been a player yet that's accepted a qualifying offer? I don't believe there has been, right?
No.
No one accepted one this season. All 13 players turned it down, didn't they? So
they all turned it down this year. I don't think anyone accepted it last year.
So no qualifying offers in, what is it, 2 or 3 years of qualifying offers going on?
2 years, yeah.
So no one's accepted a qualifying offer yet. And this year we've seen we have a club like Pittsburgh that is trying to manage things cost controllably.
Don't use Pittsburgh.
Hey, this is my soapbox.
Example of how to handle qualifying offers.
Stay down off my damn soapbox, Jason. My soapbox. They're trying to be fiscally responsible. They don't want to make AJ Burnett a qualifying offer because it will then constitute 16.7% of their salary or whatever it was, their team salary for this season coming up. And so here you have what's supposed to be like the crux of the qualifying offer, which is like, oh, it's going to help out these small market teams so that when these players leave, they, you know, they're going to be compensated for it. And now the qualifying offer has gotten to the point where it's so high that it's priced these small market teams out of making a qualifying offer. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I will be very excited when the next CBA, because nobody likes the qualifying offer, when the next CBA comes up, this qualifying offer thing is going to be the first thing that they address. I think both sides are going to very easily figure out a way to come up with some other system.
Here's my rebuttal.
All right, go ahead. Yeah, I'll step down from my soapbox.
First of all, as I said, I don't think you can really use the Pirates as a shining example of how to handle the qualifying offer system. I mean, because
this was a bad, yeah, it was not a good offseason for Pittsburgh.
Now, yeah, so anyways, more to the point, okay? If we want to talk about, you know, does the qualifying offer system work, I guess we kind of need to figure out what it was supposed to do, right?
Right, right.
I'm not really sure, honestly, I'm not really sure what the real answer to that is. I think, as you said, it's to help the lower payroll clubs, but is it to help them, is it supposed to help them keep their free agents? Is it supposed to help them be compensated for them? Is it supposed to help them compete in the free agent market? I don't really know the answer. Maybe it's a little of all of those. Because here's the thing. We fixate, okay, yes, none of them have accepted it, right?
Right.
I mean, we all know the reason why they don't accept it. It's not that $14.1 million is not enough money. It's that it's not enough years.
Right.
They don't care, you know, about necessarily the yearly rate. They want the guarantee of the long-term contract.
Right.
It's no NFL player would accept a franchise tag, which if you don't follow the NFL is also a 1 year offer, except that they don't have a choice, right?
Right. Because their union's awful.
Right. The team just forces it on them. It's like, well, we put the tag on you, you can't get it off. So in this case though, I mean, the qualifying offer certainly didn't hurt Robbie Cano. I mean, it didn't hurt Brian McCann. We fixate on guys like Jimenez and Santana and Morales. But if you look at the list, okay, these are the guys who got offered a qualifying offer. Steven Drew, Jacoby Ellsbury, Mike Napoli, Ubaldo Jimenez, Irvin Santana, Robbie Cano, Curtis Granderson, Hiroki Kuroda, Kendrys Morales, Nelson Cruz, Brian McCann, Shinshu Chu, and Carlos Beltran. The guys who are still waving in the breeze are Drew, Santana, Morales, Cruz, and until yesterday, or a couple days ago, Jimenez. To me, those are all the guys who were right on the line of maybe you shouldn't have offered them a qualifying offer.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mariners have always overvalued Morales. They didn't want to trade him at the trade deadline when they were in, like, last place.
Right.
I mean, Steven...
But you know why they probably didn't want to do that?
Because they wanted to pick.
Right.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Is that what it's supposed to do? Because if it's supposed to compensate them for losing a free agent, you know, the Indians were compensated for losing a free agent. If they had kept CC Sabathia, you know, they would have got a pick, but it was a different system, obviously, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The point is, this pick is so valuable, and the fact that if you're traded, the pick vanishes, it actually makes that team keep the player through the season more often, right? I mean, we've seen that. Like you said,
right.
The Mariners didn't want to trade him. You know, I guess a lot of those guys were on decent teams, but if you look at Steven Drew, he's not worth $14 million. He's he's a fine shortstop, but he's not worth $14 million. If I was the Red Sox, I would have been afraid he'd accept that offer, except that the Red Sox can burn money in a big pile out back, and it doesn't matter. Irvin Santana, again, man, he's right on that line where, like, oh, maybe we don't want to end up maybe being on the hook for $14
million. Right.
Morales, obviously, is not worth $14 million. We just had that discussion. And Nelson Cruz, I'm not a Nelson Cruz fan. I mean, when you factor in the PEDs, how much the market overvalues power, and the fact that one or both of his hamstrings could pop at any moment. I mean, he's not a real good offer either. My point I'm trying to make is guys like Ellsbury, Granderson, Cano, McCann, Chu, it didn't really hurt their value.
No, but you also, think about all the teams that those players have signed with. Yankees, the Mariners, who are now apparently the Yankees of the West Coast, and the Rangers.
Right.
Like, they're all going to upper mid to large market teams that don't care about spending money. The Yankees signed, how many players did the Yankees sign with qualifying offers tagged to them this year? Multiple. Yankees were just like, whatever, we don't care. I don't know.
But you're
go ahead. Give me your point there.
The point I'm making, though, is what was it supposed to do? Because if it was supposed to help teams compete for free agents, no, it's not doing that. But it is helping teams be compensated. I mean, if you ask me, the only way to help small market teams or mid market teams compete with free agents is a salary cap. I mean, there's no other way.
Right.
You can attach whatever you want. Teams like the Yankees, the Dodgers,
who are just don't care,
willing to pay whatever tax you put on them.
Right.
It just doesn't matter. I mean, but if you want to make sure that teams get a good value when they lose a star caliber player, I mean, it is doing that, right?
Last year it had, and then this year it had, up until, again, the AJ Burnett case, where a team felt priced out.
You didn't offer him with the offer.
Right, because he was, with the qualifying offer, he was already priced out of where they felt comfortable making him an offer.
But to me...
And that qualifying offer price tag is only going to increase as the average annual salary increases.
Here's the thing, though. Here's why that doesn't carry a lot of weight with me.
So, well, and think about this before you start delving into your point too far, because what if the Pittsburgh had a player like Steven Drew, where you know he's clearly not worth $14.1 million? I mean, that's another player where if Steven Drew was in another market, there's teams that just can't make him that offer because he would just cripple your salary cap, because Steven Drew eating up 20% of your cap just isn't going to work.
Right. He shouldn't. I mean, they shouldn't have made that offer.
And I guess that's my point, is that's where it's kind of failing, because now $14.1 million for a Steven Drew, just it's not going to work. And it's so we've already kind of seen the tip of it this year. Regardless of how you feel Pittsburgh handled the A.J. Burnett situation, I will say the one thing that has been consistently said is that $14.1 million was out of their price range.
So now
you're going to start seeing that at other positions as this continues to progress.
I just don't buy that argument, though, that that's a flaw of the system. I mean, the Royals and the Indians and the Pirates all have very similar payrolls. The Royals and the Indians made those offers. They took that risk that the person would accept it.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think – I don't know the Royals payroll off the top of my head, but I know the Indians was like 85 and the Pirates was like, what, 79?
Yeah. Well, and here's my rebuttal for that. What did you say all of these players turning down the qualifying offers are looking for?
Multi-year deals.
And what did A.J. Burnett say that he wanted?
What did he sign?
He signed a
multi-year deal.
Well, he did after he'd already stated – I just want to pitch one more year for Pittsburgh or retire. So,
but this with the Pirates, though, it's all over $2 million.
Right. That's moot, though, because I'm just saying, like, in a vacuum.
No, it's not.
It is, because in a vacuum, this is where that system is failing. And it's going to keep failing. I mean, you're going to see it again next year. You'd have to pull up the crop of free agents next year. But you're going to see it again. You're going to see more players like Steven Drew who are going to start being priced out of the market with that qualifying offer, and teams are going to eventually say, like, We just can't afford the risk of a Steven Drew accepting a $14.1 million one-year deal.
I just don't think that's going to happen, though, because if you're not the Red Sox, the Yankees, or the Dodgers, you're not offering Steven Drew a qualifying offer.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. That's where the system starts to fail other teams. Well, when you have those mid-market teams that can't make that offer to those players because they can't afford 20% of their salary being tied up in a...
But see, I don't see that as a failure because you shouldn't be making that offer. He's not worth $14.1 million.
Right. Well, I guess that's where I view it as a failure because I guess I think the purpose of the qualifying offer is to help ensure that the players that you're losing in free agency are eventually replenished in your system. And that's where it's starting to fail teams.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, because, you know, the Indians will get a chance to replace Jimenez. The Reds will get a chance to replace Chu. The Braves will get a chance to replace McCann.
Right, internally with their own players, not
with... Isn't that the point? I mean, the whole point of the system is attaching draft pick compensation. It's not about, I don't think it's really about keeping the player on that team. It's making sure you're compensated when they leave.
Right. I think that's what I'm saying. I think we're talking about the same thing. And so I'm saying if you can't make a player a qualifying offer because he's priced out of your market already with a qualifying offer and you're not getting that pick when that player just leaves, that's where the qualifying offer system fails.
I don't think you'd be so upset though when Steven Drew leaves. I mean, we're not talking
right, about the top. Right, but I will be upset because that draft pick that should be going to a club to replenish the players that are leaving isn't going there. And that's where I get upset. Or that's where I would be upset if I had a player like that.
I mean, but you think there should be a draft pick attached when Steven Drew leaves? You think he's that high level of a player?
I don't know. I mean, that... When you break it down like a player by player thing, probably not for Steven Drew specifically, but I don't know. I'll look at the crop of free agent players for next year, and I'll tell you the players that I would be upset by, because I know I wouldn't want to make that qualifying offer, but I wouldn't just want them to be able to walk away.
But here's the thing: if they're a good enough player, that this is what I'm saying. If they're good enough that you're going to be upset when they leave, I don't think there is a snowball's chance in hell that they're going to accept that offer, because they know on the free market they're going to get a 3, 4, 5, 7 year deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll have to see, but, you know, Steven Drew didn't accept it this year, so I don't know, man.
But here's the thing. This is the other thing. We're focusing on the $14 million. Now that he's denied that offer, no one has to pay him $14 million.
Oh, and no one's going to.
Right. But what I'm saying is, what do you think Steven Drew could sign for? Could he sign a 4-year, $25 million contract? 4-year, $30 million? I mean, what do you think he could sign for?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
because my point is that what Steven Drew's actually worth? If that's what he gets, I think in the long run, he wins.
Yeah. Yeah, if he gets that multi-year deal, he does, definitely, if that's what he's looking for.
And the Red Sox win because their gamble paid off and they get a draft pick.
Right. Hey, I agree with that. Oh, yeah.
Because here's the thing. What happens in those mid-tier free agents, I mean, the Indians benefited from that big time. Those mid-tier free agents, the price goes down. And then the lower market teams actually can get involved. I mean, they're not going to be able to compete on the top tier. They're never going to compete there unless there's a salary cap.
Right.
But it does drive down the price of the mid-tier free agents. I mean, look at Ubaldo. If Ubaldo stinks, which is, you know, a distinct possibility, this deal is going to blow up in the Orioles' face. But if he pitches like he did the last half of the year, that's a huge value they just got. You know, we're talking about $10 million for Masterson or $17 million or whatever for Homer Bailey, they'd have Ubaldo for $12 million.
Right. Yeah, I don't disagree with that either.
I mean, it's a complicated thing. Don't get me wrong. It's got a lot of levels to it, but I think too often we focus on the guys who get left in the lurch, and too often they're guys that probably should have never been given that in the first place. That's why nobody wants to pay.
Right. We'll have to have an off the record, because I will continue to talk about my point for the next hour and a half, which I think will then lead you to continue to talk about your point for the next hour and a half as well, which I think we might eventually just have to come to the conclusion we're going to have to agree to disagree on qualifying offers, or one of us is just going to have to agree that we don't agree with the other person, and that's going to have to be okay.
Yeah, it might have to be that way.
That's just the way it's going to have to be, I think. Qualifying offers, they stink.
I disagree.
That counterpoint. let's wrap up this discussion on qualifying offers and thank our listeners instead, and ask them if they're listening to us on iTunes to give us a rate and review. And if you want to check us out on the web, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. Jason, we may have some interesting interviews coming up. So make sure we keep everyone up to date on those.
Yeah.
As they start coming down the pike. So... And that'll be about it. So keep checking out the website. Keep checking us out on iTunes. We look forward to talking to you soon. And we'll talk to you when we... When will we talk to you next?
Well, I don't know.
We got spring training going on, maybe a couple weeks.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll talk to you in a couple weeks then. So for Andy... Or for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burnett. And we look forward to talking to you soon. And I got